Tiger fans, welcome to episode 49 of the official Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club podcast, bringing you all the latest news, updates, and buzz surrounding your mighty JSU Tigers. I am the Corey C. Be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast to be notified of every new episode. Apple users, rate and review the show, and everyone, follow Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club on Facebook and Tiger Talk 1400 on Twitter. It all helps the cause, which is the I love, Jackson State University. Hosting the show with me today are Charles Bishop and Chris Neely. Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Corey, how's it going, man?
I am doing well and ready for another exciting show with an amazing guest.
It's definitely an honor to have this person on. We are joined today by a historian and legend when it comes to sports journalism in the state of Mississippi. He is a 12-time Mississippi Sports Writer of the Year and the most awarded sports writer in the state's history. He's also a Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame inductee, along with a host of other accolades, none other than Mr. Rick Cleveland. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be with you. If you're trying to say I'm old, you're right about that.
No, I'm saying you are wise and well accomplished.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm old, too.
we'll take it all. Well, it's an honor for us to be on with you today. And let's start with this COVID-19 crisis, which has been the story of 2020. And you've been covering sports for over 40 years. And that's not to say you're old. That's just to say you've been covering sports for over 40 years, for a while. But there obviously has never been anything quite like this. So can you talk to us about how it's affected you personally in terms of covering sports and your daily routine, as well as, I guess, just your prevailing thoughts on the pandemic?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm like everybody else. And we've been staying at home. I have not eaten in a restaurant since, what, February? We're trying to be careful. We're wearing masks and gloves and doing what you're supposed to do. I wish everybody would. As far as covering sports, you know, right now, there's just not much. We were just starting what was a really promising college baseball season in Mississippi. And then it was, you know, it was cut off. Now, like everybody else, I'm trying to figure out whether they're going to play, whether we're going to play high school and college football this season. And honestly, every day that passes and every day the numbers go up, it looks less and less likely to me.
Rick, let me ask this question in terms of, and theoretically speaking, there is a lot of talk nationally about potentially moving the fall sports season to the spring season. Is that something that can potentially work? Or I know we're in unprecedented times, but what does the sports look like going forward?
Sure. I wish I knew. I do think that moving it to the spring would be a last resort. But at the same time, if the numbers keep, if the numbers don't get better and there's not a vaccine, before the end of the year, I just don't see how that it won't happen. If I was a betting man right now, I think I would bet on football delaying to the spring, not necessarily the NFL, but college football, certainly. I mean, you know, they're just having voluntary workouts right now. And, at colleges across the country, they're having multiple players, athletes, student athletes, who are testing positive. Let's just say the first week of the season, who's Jackson State got first on the schedule this year?
We had Lane up first, and I think that one has already been canceled.
Yeah, that's right. Already been canceled. Well, mm-hmm. whoever it is it Tennessee State second?
That one's off the schedule.
Yeah, so, and then, well, there's two right there, and then you go to the third week, and let's say that they have an out, the team that's supposed to come to Jackson has an outbreak on campus that week. You know, there's just so many uncertainties, and I don't think right now we know how many students are even going to be on campus, mm-hmm. how many actual classes there are going to be. I don't see it. You know, and I hate it, but I just don't see how with the current numbers and everything that we can play. But I do think that, you know, where the SEC is concerned, and you're getting into millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. I think State and Ole Miss both got almost $44 million from the league last year for TV and bowl money, and so they're gonna do everything they possibly can to play. And if that means moving it to spring, I think that's what they'll do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just reading a story this morning about Southern Cal, USC. You know, they play in the Coliseum in L.A., and they're trying to figure out how they're going to they have determined that the most people that they can let in and be socially distanced is 12,000 people in a 100,000
seat
arena. How do you determine which 12,000 get in? I guess it would be the family. It would be family of the players and coaches, and then the people who give the most money would be my guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's all kinds of questions about it. You know, I just hope and pray every day that we get a vaccine sooner than later.
No doubt about it.
You know, Rick, the other big news, you know, as of late, COVID-19 is certainly out there. But here in Mississippi, we just recently officially decommissioned the state flag. And, you know, there's always been, you know, the kind of pressure, and social justice pressure that's brought on by the sports world. What do you think it means, you know, for Mississippi to make that change, particularly as it relates to college athletic and college athletic recruitment?
Well, I think it's good for the state in every which way, athletically, business-wise, just. I mean, you know, guys, I'll be 68 in October, and I think the first time I wrote about the need to get rid of the current flag was in 1983.
Wow.
So, I mean, I've been fighting this battle for a long time, and I'll be honest with you, I did not think I would be alive when it changed. I always have known it's got to change at some point, but I wondered whether I would live to see it, and I can't believe just how happy I am to see it change, and I'm proud of the role that sports played in the momentum to get it changed. I don't think had it not been for sports, it would not have changed. I mean, I think sports was one of the big players, both the SEC and the NCAA, and Kylin Hill at Mississippi State, and all our coaches and all our athletic directors and all our administrators who came down to the Capitol and a show of unity. I thought it was huge, and I couldn't be happier about the doing away with the flag, and you know, and I. people say, well, what do you want to be the next flag? And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't care if it was a dirty wash rag. I just wanted to get rid of it. because, if, you know, I know I'm speaking to the choir here, but we're a state that's almost 40% African American. And anybody that does the least little bit of homework about that flag knows what it represents and why it was adopted, you know, 29 years after the Civil War ended. I mean, it was a black mark on the state, and I'm glad to see it go away.
You know, Rick, and you mentioned you've been writing about this since 1983, but I mean, I'm curious, why do you think it took Greg Sankey to sort of drag Mississippi into the 21st century, really push the winds of change for the state?
You know, I wish I could answer that. I was one of those people back in 2001 that thought it was going to pass, that we were going to change it then.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was so one-sided, with the referendum went so one-sided against changing the flag, was a huge disappointment and wake-up call to me and to a lot of people, you know, a lot of forward-thinking Mississippians. And I don't know why it took that, but I do know that in this legislative session, it was dead in the water. It was not going in. The movement to do away with the flag was not going anywhere. To first Sankey and then the NCAA the very next day. That's what started the momentum, and that's when, you know, other groups, business leaders, the Baptists got on board and made it happen. I'll say this about our state. If you've got football and the Baptists on the same side, you've got a hell of a chance.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the role that sports played in this thing. And y'all also mentioned Mississippi State running back Kylan Hill. And he was very vocal about the issue, and he spoke out on social media saying either change the flag or he wouldn't be representing the state anymore. It seemed like it gained even more steam after that. So how significant was his statement in terms of bringing more national attention to it and pushing the movement forward? Because I don't recall a time where those many athletes were as vocal.
Well, I think it was huge. I think what Kylan did was big, and I think that the fact that his teammates and athletes from other schools, from the other schools in the state, backed him up on social media was also huge. I think there's a great possibility had this not happened that you would have had several players transferring away from the Mississippi schools to out of state. Mm-hmm. I think we certainly could have seen that. I do think that it's important that people's perceptions can be swayed so many ways, but, you know, on no state-supported university campus has the state flag flown since 2016. You know, our universities quit flying it a long time ago. So, you know, I applaud the universities for doing that, but I still don't blame student athletes such as Kylan Hill for not wanting to represent a state where they flew a flag that it basically celebrates the slavery of his ancestors. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, and switching gears, Rick, I want to get your thoughts on something that is a hot topic amongst JSU fans and beyond, and that's our stadium, Mississippi Veterans Memorial. Now, we could do an entire show on the history of that stadium, but in a nutshell, how would you describe the importance or significance of the vet when telling the story of Mississippi sports from a historical standpoint?
Oh, golly, so much history there. I mean, just so much history has occurred in that stadium. You know, it's where Walter Payton played college football. So there's that. It was also, you know, where Archie Manning played football. It's where Mississippi State, Southern Miss, Ole Miss all had some of their biggest victories. It's where Mississippi Valley State and Alcorn played one of the most significant games in college football history, in my opinion. A game that was moved from Itabena to Jackson and drew 65,000 people, being played on a Sunday opposite NFL football and actually outdrawing NFL teams in the TV ratings. There's so much history there. We had our high school championship games there forever. Mm-hmm. It's tremendous. The history is tremendous. Structurally, the place is still really sound. I mean, it needs cosmetic stuff. It needs a lot of cosmetic stuff. But structurally, it's really a sound stadium. The press box should have been destroyed 30 years
ago. Yeah.
You can't see through the windows, which you can't open.
Right.
you're fighting yellow jackets. You're sitting in metal folding chairs. I could go on and on about the press box. The air conditioning won't keep up with the heat in the September games. But I have nothing but fond memories other than that for that stadium. Golly, so much has happened there. I mean, I remember watching Steve McNair do magical things in that stadium. It's a big part of Mississippi history. I don't know what the future holds for.
And Rick, that kind of leads me into this question in terms of, I mean, stadiums, I mean, they are creatures of nostalgia. I mean, it's hard to let them go. And I know we see that, like, with a structure like the Astrodome in Houston. But what do you think, the impact would be to Jackson if Jackson State were to get their own stadium? Basically, if there wasn't a memorial stadium there in the middle of the city, what do you think that would look like for the city of Jackson?
Well, it'd be great for Jackson State, assuming it was I don't know what the hopes are there now as far as there's not a space on campus, actually, is there? I mean, it would need to just be real close to campus,
mm-hmm.
is my understanding. I don't know that there's a place where you would have enough room for a stadium and parking. It's already pretty crammed together as it is. But it'd be great for Jackson State. I've always been told, I've always assumed, I think I've reported it in the past, that the long-term plan was for UMMC, the medical center, to eventually expand over there, and for Jackson State to have its own stadium near campus. You know, meanwhile, since that has been being discussed and talked about for all these years, the cost of building stadiums has probably tripled, you know.
Sure.
So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I've talked to several football coaches at Jackson State through the years who actually love the idea of having a 60,000 seat stadium as a home stadium at the championship series division level. I mean, is there any other team in at that level that has a stadium like that in America?
Maybe Yale. Guess. That might be the only one I can think of.
Yeah, the Yale Bowl would be one. Yeah. But Yale doesn't fill that one up as much as Jackson State has in the past at Memorial State. I don't know what the answer is, but it does make sense for if that land is needed for the medical facility and to expand, that whenever that happens, that the state somehow come up with the money for Jackson State to have its own facility closer to campus. You know, at one time they were even talking about an indoor multi-purpose facility, which could work for the city of Jackson and to draw big concerts and things like that. I don't know. That's for minds that are a lot smarter than mine.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on the right feelings of it, Rick. It's going to definitely, you know, have to take some concerted effort from multiple parties. As much as an on-campus stadium means to Jackson State, that land is just as valuable to UNC, so there's a partner. And now with the flag coming down, and over the years you've always had these groups that didn't want to have events in the state because of the flag. So now with that no longer being a barrier, you have the opportunity to do something more in line than our current state coliseum. By having a multi-purpose, because Chuck and I talk all the time about the AAC was designed around indoor track meets. You know, it was for basketball, but it's an athletic and assembly center, emphasis on assembly, not really basketball. So some kind of multi-purpose venue in the city limits is good for the state. It's good for Jackson State, good for the city. But in this post-COVID-19 economy that we can imagine, we're really bottom out. No one person can pull off something like that alone. So it's going to take everybody wanting it to happen.
It would have to be a city, county, state, university working together to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. The state, the fact that the city of Jackson and the state of Mississippi's Coliseum is in such decrepit shape is it's just so sad. I don't know any other way to say it. I mean, Ole Miss has been playing a game here every year, a December game, but they're not going to do it anymore. They just said it was too embarrassing to have it to play and for their players to use those locker rooms. Have y'all been in those locker rooms?
Oh yes, sir.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's archaic at best.
That was even after
the renovation.
It's just terrible. And you know, the sound is terrible. The seating for basketball is not good at all. The MHSAA finally decided they just had to, it didn't suit them anymore. And that was a big part of Mississippi high school tradition. It's like, you know, the kids from all the yellow buses come into what they call the big house and all that. But you know, they had better locker rooms in East of Butchie than they had here. You know, it's just it's just too outdated, and I hate it, but that's just the way it is.
No doubt. Rick, let me ask this question in terms of, I mean, you've covered so much sports in the state of Mississippi, and especially covering these games in Mississippi Veterans Memorial Stadium. But for a generation that's never physically watched Walter Payton, Jerry Rice, or Steve McNair play in Veterans Memorial, just kind of describe their game and the kind of electricity they brought to the stadium.
Well, Walter, who was a year younger than I grew up in Hattiesburg, and he grew up in Columbia, which is 26 miles away. And he is the single best all around football player that I've ever seen play. I mean, he could run it. He could throw it. He could catch it. He could kick it. you know, he would have been one of the greatest strong safeties of all time if somebody had been foolish enough to play him on defense.
Wow!
just a tremendous athlete who was the epitome of a competitor. I mean, he worked hard at it. He competed hard at it, and he was gifted all at the same time. And I don't know what more I'd say, except he's the best football player I've ever seen. Jerry Rice is the best wide receiver I've ever seen, the leading receiver and scorer in pro football history. Amazing. And people always ask me when I'm doing a interview with somebody on a national level, how did he end up at Mississippi Valley State? And, you know, Jerry was 5'11" coming out of high school, tiny, tiny high school, and didn't run that fast. In fact, you know, when he ran the 40-yard dash at the pro combine, he ran 4.67, which is that's pretty fast for an ordinary human being, but it's not real fast for an NFL wide receiver. But he was just he ran precise routes, he worked at it, and he had the best hands ever, I guess. He just tremendous. You know, his brother played at Jackson State.
Tom Rice.
Yeah, so it actually came down from between Jackson State and Mississippi Valley, and I think he chose Valley because they were going to throw the ball more, you know.
Did they ever?
yeah. It was amazing to watch. I covered three of his Super Bowls. He was MVP in one of them, and could have been the MVP in all three of them. He was just a remarkable player. And then McNair, you know, I first saw him when he was a 16-year-old junior at Mount Olive playing in the state championship game, and he kicked off to start the game, and he kicked off straight ahead. He didn't play soccer. He wasn't a soccer-style kicker, so he kicked straight ahead, and he kicked the ball through the end zone. And he never came out of the game. He made just about every tackle on defense. He threw a touchdown, ran a touchdown, and caught a touchdown in a 21-16 state championship victory.
Wow.
And I'll never forget the last line of my column was, remember that name, colon, Stevie McNair. Because they called him Stevie back then.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then he went on to Alcorn and set the all-time NCAA total offense record. Just a remarkable athlete. Should have won the Heisman. I mean, the guy who won it was Rashawn Salah, and Steve was a better runner than he was, and not to even bring in the passing part of it, he was a better runner than Salah. I'll never forget, I was up in New York for that Heisman, and the press conference the day before, we were sitting around a table, and Warren Sapp. They went the question to each of the candidates was, who should win this Heisman? And when it got to Warren Sapp, and he said, man, have y'all seen film of this guy? And he pointed at Steve McBear. He said, there's no way he shouldn't win. And I think he was right. He should have won.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of two SWAC players that I voted for the Heisman, the other being Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice, his senior year was the year that Doug Flutie won it.
Mm.
And, you know, Flutie was a great college player, but he, you know, let's face it, he was not Jerry Rice.
Right.
You know, so... yeah, but those three were pretty remarkable. And there've been other great SWAC players that that I've covered through the years at Memorial Stadium, including Jimmy Smith, who still ranks in the top, I think, five or six receivers in NFL history.
No doubt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and from my hometown, Harold Jackson, he retired the third leading receiver in NFL history. You know, Willie Totten threw a whole lot of completed passes for touchdowns, too, at Valley.
Yes, he did.
And Jackie Slater's maybe the best offensive lineman in history. And he played there, blocked for Walter there. You know, the Walter's senior year at Jackson State, I came up here from Hattiesburg with his agent, Bud Holmes, for the senior day, Walter's senior year. And there were 24 Jackson State seniors who were considered pro prospects.
Wow.
I mean, that's how many guys that they had running the 40 and bench pressing and all that. I mean, it was – and you know, two of the first five picks in the draft were Walter and Robert Brazil.
Robert Brazil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Ricky Young was in that class, too. It was amazing how many you know, let's face it, guys, the guys that are going in the first round now from the SEC, they used to play in the SWAC.
Mm-hmm.
Their daddies and granddaddies played in the SWAC. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was best, you know, attaching that back, Rick, to what you mentioned about Colin Hill and his flag stance had the bluff been called. You know, you're seeing now, even in the wake of all the other social justice issues, police murders, and all the way to the flag vote in Mississippi. You're seeing, at least in a social media footprint, or in a better way to term it, in PR, is that a lot of kids now are talking about going to HBCUs or going to the SWAC or going to Jackson State instead. So it's just going to be interesting to see how all that unfolds with the rich history of the conference or the conferences when you include even the MEAC, if that growth or that return is going to happen with that high level of caliber athlete going back to HBCUs.
Well, we'll see. It's the whole the thing that the HCBUs will have to counter is the fact, the TV and the facilities and all that. That's a hard nut to crack.
It is.
Yeah.
I tell you, I was at the house that Rube built over at the Sports Museum one night, and Coach W.C. Gordon was speaking, and this same subject came up, and folks were touching on the facilities and the TV dollars, and Coach stood up. He said, look, all that's fine and dandy, but that's not what they got over. What they got over is they got three meets. And so everybody looked puzzled, and he said, when you go to the cafeteria at some of these schools, they got three meats. You could choose from chicken or beef or fish. We only got one or the other. And so he says, don't focus on the facility. That's too much money. Just get us three meats, and we can recruit all day.
Yeah, that reminds me of when Sammy Wynder, he's the great player from Southern Miss that played for the Denver Broncos forever, who transferred to Southern Miss from Mississippi Valley State. And on his recruiting visit to Southern Miss, he was going through the lunch line. And they asked him what he said, I'll have the chicken. And he said, can I have a piece of, can I have dark meat? And they said, no, you get a whole chicken here. He said, I made up my mind right there, and that's where I was going to school. He said, a whole chicken for me? So, I'm sure that is a factor. It was for Sammy Wynder.
No doubt.
When you talked about Rick about the about Rice and Peyton and McNair, one of the things I want to ask you, and I think I heard your answer, but with this being the I love Jackson State, I'm leading in, giving you some segue hints. Podcast that's all about 1400 Lynn Street. I was going to ask you, out of Alcorn's McNair and Valley's Rice or Jackson State's Peyton, who was the best you got to see, play? But I think I heard your answer, but I think the folks need to hear it directly.
Yeah, well, Walter Peyton is the best football player I've ever seen. If you take into every aspect of the game, he's the best football player I've ever seen. Jerry Rice is the best wide receiver I've ever seen, and Steve McNair is the most exciting football player I've ever seen. How about that?
Awesome answer. Awesome.
Fair enough.
Exactly. Rick, let me ask, and you were executive director of the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame Museum.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to kind of ask, I'm always amazed as I walk through there each time I'm in Jackson, I make a trip to go in there. But are there things in there that continue to catch your eye as you walk through there? Because it is a cornucopia, if you will, of just everything within the state, and it's well put together. But are there things that are especially close to you in this?
Well, my favorite part of the whole place is the kiosk, the touchscreen kiosk, where you can like touch Walter Payton's name and watch highlights of him playing and hear interviews with him and his teammates. It's not only the individuals, it's big plays in Mississippi history. You can touch the 1983 Egg Bowl and see the kick that Artie Cosby made that got blown 65-mile-an-hour gust of wind blew back from the goalposts and decided.
The hand of God.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed Emory Blard after that game, and I started it out by saying, "Coach, I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to say and what even to ask." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what you can say." He said, "You can put this in your dadgum newspaper. God just decided that Mississippi State was not going to win this game." And you know, I mean, he certainly had a point there. It was miraculous, to say the least. But that's my point, being that you can watch the greatest athletes, you can watch the greatest moments in Mississippi sports history right there. It's at your fingers, and it's a pretty neat thing to do. And I can go in there and punch in Ace Cleveland, who was my dad, and I can hear him talk, which is he's been gone now for 24 years. So it's pretty special for me to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I never enter that building when I don't have a good time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is well put together, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hap and Hilda Owen at Communication Arts were the original, and Bud Holloman, who had his own architecture firm. They were the three people that really designed and came up with the whole concept for that museum, and it still stands up with all the sports museums I've seen across the country. And proud of the fact that in Mississippi, where you know, in other states, like even states like Florida and Texas, that the museums have either shut down, sports museums have either shut down or shortened their hours. Or shorten the amount of days, or, you know, cut back on the amount of days that they're open. But in Mississippi, it's, you know, we're still rocking along and open 6 days a week, 52 weeks a year, when there's not a coronavirus.
Right.
Right, exactly.
All right, and can you let our listeners know where they can reach your work nowadays, or perhaps even follow you on social media?
Be glad to. I'm right now for MississippiToday.org, write two or three columns a week. Wrote about 10 columns about the Mississippi State flag in the last month. But yeah, it's MississippiToday.org. It's a relatively new. It started in 2016. In my opinion, it covers the state. State government and politics better than any other news source. I'm a one-man sports operation, and I kind of like that. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm enjoying it, still enjoy doing what I've been doing now since I was 13. I started working at the Hattiesburg American as a 13-year-old, so that really means I've been doing it for 54 years. So,
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of history.
Mm-hmm. A lot of history, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it has been an honor. We definitely want to thank you for your time. This episode has been one for the history books. That's both literally and figuratively. So, again, we thank you so much for coming on with us.
Well, I appreciate y'all inviting me. Keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate it, Ray.
All right. Y'all take care.
Sure thing.
You too.
And that'll do it for episode 49 of Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. Thank you to all of our listeners. And again, be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast. Apple users, rate and review the show. And everyone, follow Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club on Facebook and Tiger Talk 1400 on Twitter. I can't stress the importance of this enough. We're looking to do some big things with this platform to aid the athletics department, and it all starts with you. downloading, subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show. And tell every Tiger that you know. We're on all podcast outlets, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, and so on. And we'll be posting each episode on our Facebook and Twitter pages. As always, thank you for your support. Go Tigers! Hashtag the I love.